episode, we talk about the Two of Cups. Out of all the cards in the deck, this one is the one that is most likely to speak to love, hooking up, partnership, and attachment. To help guide us through, we've brought on relationship expert, writer, Instagram advice giver, and total charmer, Tracy McMillan. So stay tuned, because as Ian Svenonius says, when we say we're in love, you best believe we mean love, L-U-V.
When I say I'm in love, you best believe I mean I'm in love, L-U-V.
Listeners, just a reminder that our current workshop is The Emperor in 2020, Making Daddy Work for You, now available for download. In the workshop, you'll get tarot spreads, rituals, meditations, invocations, songs, gestures of power, and more to help you access your power, get organized, and bring your visions into reality in support of the health and happiness of all beings. I know I'm going to be using a lot of the techniques from this workshop this year, and if that sounds good to you, click the link in the show notes to purchase the workshop or become a subscriber and get it with the cost of membership. The music to Romeo and Juliet is so romantic. I mean, there's the Mancini version, there's the Tchaikovsky ballet version, and then there's the Radiohead version at the end of Romeo and Juliet with Claire Danes. I mean, come on. In your dream of the Two Cups, you're on a stage. There's a backdrop of rolling hills behind you, a tiny village, a clear blue sky. And today is your wedding day. You're playing Romeo. You're playing Juliet. You're playing Tristan and Isolde. You're playing Popo and Itza. You're dressed in your costumes of wedding finery, your silks and your plumes, and there are garlands of flowers in your hair, red poppies. Your lover wears a laurel wreath, solemn. You look into each other's eyes, almost as if you're holding your breath. Are you really going to do this? You are. You're ready. Your lover reaches towards you, extending their cup. In toast, a toast to you, a toast to your love. Your fingers touch as two snakes coil up a staff between you, and above you hovers a winged red lion, roaring fiercely like at the beginning of a movie. This is the beginning of your love story together.
Today, we escape. We escape.
Remember last week we were talking about the Ace of Cups and how the cup symbolizes the fountain, the well, the elixir of life-giving waters that rises from the earth to restore us. These waters give us youth, beauty, love. They represent the essential life force. Sometimes I officiate weddings. Most of what I do as an officiant, I learned from my priestess mother. And in our tradition, the family of each of the lovers brings sacred water from their home to the ceremony. And they pour the water from cups, from separate chalices, into a central chalice. And then the folks getting married both drink from the same cup. Have you ever seen this? Maybe you have something like this in your own tradition. Many of us have this idea of drinking from the same cup or bringing two waters together as a symbol of commitment and communion. Well, friends, that's what this whole episode is about. What it means when two people, two streams, bring their life-giving waters together. Or sometimes it could be more than two people if you're polyamorous, but even then, you still have a relationship to each of your partners individually. Let's talk about the symbolism of the card. I think we all get the couple coming together symbolism, but there's some other strange stuff going on in this card if you're looking at the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith version. Why are there two snakes climbing up a staff? And what's with the flying lion's head? The two snakes climbing up the staff are the caduceus, symbol of Hermes, guide of souls, god of healing and communication, a queer god. In astrology, Hermes/Mercury can travel in either sect of night or day. He's neither masculine nor feminine, or rather, they are both masculine and feminine. Let's just say healing and communication are both implied by the caduceus and leave it there for now. Because, witches, there is so much to say about this. I want to have time to get into some of the more deep stuff with Tracy in a few minutes, so I'll just say this. In depth psychology, the process of individuation, becoming a fully realized human being, is about bringing your masculine and your feminine, quote-unquote, sides together. This is what all spiritual work is. It's what yoga means, that union between the different aspects of ourself. That union is the great work of the alchemists. It's all about the union of opposites or polarities. But remember, this does not mean bringing things together into a state of neutral gray mush. Our work is to celebrate the yang energy and celebrate the yin energy within ourselves so that they can both be their healthiest, most exalted form. And of course, what, or should I say who, helps us do this? Who helps us bring our yin and yang aspects together? Other people, our relationships. They're the things that challenge us to be the most magnificent version of ourselves, because it's in love that we can see the parts of ourselves that we're most blind to. Both the good, the parts of ourselves that we can't see that are great, also the places where we have room for improvement. Okay, but what about the lion-headed god floating above the couple? What does that have to do with love, Amanda, you might be asking? That lion head, my friends, is Mithra, sometimes known as Mithras, a 3,000-year-old Iranian god who was worshipped as far north as Great Britain and even into what is now Germany until the Roman Empire fell to Christianity in the 4th century. Mithra sometimes appeared with wings in the head of a lion. He was the god of contracts, oaths, and mutual obligation. So a good god to have at your wedding. His worship spread as far east as India, where he was known as the god Mitra, which in Vedic texts was the word used to refer to both contracts and the concept of the friend. Isn't that crazy that the word the friend, or the concept of the friend, and the word for contract was the same word, and it was the name of this god? In short, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, Mithra may signify any kind of interpersonal communication and whatever establishes good relations between people. So now, you know why that lion head is there. Numerologically, the Two of Cups is a two, obviously, bringing it under the rulership of the major arcana card, the High Priestess, who is also the two of the major arcana. Also significantly, Justice, because Justice is the quote-unquote higher octave of the High Priestess card. If you're confused what I mean by that, go back and listen to the Strange Magic, High Priestess, Justice, or Grids episodes. In the Ace, which we talked about last week, which is number one, love appears. It appears as a force. It's the unifying force of the universe, one might say. But really, love requires separation. There has to be self and other in order for love to exist. Two is a requirement. Even if you say, I love myself, well, who is I in that context? I is an aspect of you relating to yourself. There's necessarily a split when we're talking about love. In critical theory, we might say that the ace is a thesis and the deuce is the antithesis or the antithesis. We could ride on the winds of theory on this for days. Marx, Hegel, the dialectic, Kierkegaard, the self as a relation that relates to itself, Roland Barthes and his lover's discourse, bell hooks on love, the study of yin and yang. But now let's just say that the twos represent the other. Investigating the other, seeing the other, loving the other, integrating the other. And this two, the Two of Cups, most of all, because it's about water. It's about relationships. In astrology, the Two of Cups represents Venus, the planetary angel of love and connection, in Cancer, the sign of care and nurturing. We could say that the Two of Cups also represents the merging equaling water, of opposites being the two polarity. Because of its association with the High Priestess, the Two of Cups also represents the moon, femininity, and receptivity. It represents listening. It represents things that happen at night, in the dark, between the sheets. It's not just about giving love, but it is also about, crucially, being willing to receive it. Fundamentally, this card is about mutual exchange. Basic principles. This card comes up in a reading. What's going on? Well, just to recap, we've decided that this card, the Two of Cups, is about love. It's about healing because of the staff of Mercury and the Caduceus. It's about bringing together opposite forces. It's also about attraction, the force that draws us towards something, that Venusian force. Because of the Cancerian influence, remember this card corresponds to Venus and Cancer. It's also about cooperation and contracts. This card can appear both at the beginning of a relationship as a signal that you're about to fall in love, you're about to enter into some kind of covenant with someone, but it can also indicate a reconciliation if it comes up in a reading. It might be that you're about to get back together with someone or heal a relationship, because remember, the card is about healing. Or it could be a deepening of love that is already there, so being willing to go one step deeper. Ultimately, this card is about being willing to encounter the other and to commit to continued contact. What could go wrong, right? LOLZ. Up next, we're going to talk about what could go wrong and how to make it oh so right with our special guest, Tracy McMillan.
Deep and watery, lift the glass to me. Drip it with dew, I raise the glass to you. Waters merge and harmonize. Eyes ignite, smiles run, and spells bind. Our open lips touch the Two of Cups.
The song you just heard can be used to call in the magic of the Two of Cups. Call in love with this song. Just a reminder that our subscribers will get a downloadable playlist with lyrics to all of the songs in our Cups season to use at the end of the season. Yet another reason to become a subscriber. In addition to our excellent workshops, right now you can get the Emperor in 2020 workshop by going to the link in our show notes or subscribe. Here we are with Tracy McMillan. She's a television writer. She's a relationship expert. She's the author of 3 books, as well as the viral blog post, Why You're Not Married, which for more than 2 years was number one on the Huffington Post. Her credits as a television writer include Mad Men, Good Girls Revolt, and Marvel's Runaways. She also has a viral TED Talk, The Person You Really Need to Marry, which has been viewed more than 12 million times. 12 million times. As a relationship expert, Tracy has made dozens of television and radio appearances, including The Today Show, Access Hollywood Live, and Oprah's Super Soul Sunday. Currently, she can be seen every Saturday on the OWN network hosting the relationship reality show Family or Fiancé. She's also the mother of a 22-year-old non-toxically masculine guy, and she's also the sweetest, coolest person you've ever met. Tracy, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm just glad I get to hang out with you.
I know. It's like always my dearest wish whenever I find you're going to be somewhere.
It's always a pleasure.
I get to see Tracy. Yeah. And now we get to talk about love, everybody's favorite. Certainly our favorite subject.
Definitely.
When we're at bars or whatever.
Definitely.
We're like, let's break this down. So today we're talking about the Two of Cups, the card in the deck that most speaks to the idea of romantic love, partnership, commitment. And I was thinking it would be cool to start with the basics, something everybody's talking about right now, but a lot of people maybe are a little bit fuzzy on the details of this, which is attachment styles.
Okay.
Can we just like break these down? What does this mean, attachment styles?
Okay, so when you're born, I think it starts with the biology. A lot of my understanding of relationships starts with the fact that we're primates, and that brings a certain set of circumstances with it. First of all, we're born before we're fully cooked. Because our brains are so big, in order to get through the birth canal, you have to get born. What that means is that our attachment process becomes the most important thing to our survival, because we're not done. It's not like we're baby deer who can just like prance away minutes after being born. We have this incredibly long period of dependency. And in that time, our bond with a primary attachment figure is the thing that is our survival. That is even more important. It's the most important thing to a human being is attachment and that whole process. We wouldn't survive without it. And then later, our love relationships map on to that exact attachment infrastructure. It's really one and the same thing. When you fall in love, it's as if you go through that attachment process again. So anything that was left unresolved in your original process with your parent is going to get activated. And whatever style you, I want to say adopted, it's not really adopted because you were an infant. So whatever strategy or style you used in those early, you know, first year or two of life is going to also come into play. Now, attachment is something that stays with you. Whatever your style is, think of it almost like a language. You speak that language for your entire life. It doesn't mean you can't learn a new language. You can, but you're always going to be like a new... You know,
it's like you dream in this language, or it's like the first thing, and then you have to translate into your second language.
I can learn French, but if I learn French when I'm 35, I'm going to have an accent.
Right.
You know, I'm always going to have originally come from the United States. So there's four basic attachment styles. There's secure. That's roughly one third of the people. Secure is characterized. It's like I always joke, like, we don't know any of these people.
I know. I was like, who are these people?
Like, who are these people? I'll tell you, they're in Minneapolis, when I left home. I don't think the Secures leave Minneapolis.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They're not like, I'm dying to move to New York. They're not dying to move to New York.
I'm going to stay here where it's cozy.
Exactly.
All the insecurely attached people move to the city.
Exactly. Like, they like cozy. Attachment feels good. They are characterized by just like a calm sense of having their needs met. So how does a secure person come about? The mother is consistently responding. I'm going to say the mother, it could be the father, but it's the primary attachment figure, is consistently responding to their needs. And the attachment system unfolds in an orderly way. Then there's anxious attachment. Anxious attachment happens when the primary caretaker is inconsistent. This has a whole bunch of things that go along with it, but the anxiously attached person is just that. They're hypervigilant. They are...
You mean they're like constantly looking to
scanning,
see if something's going to go wrong?
Or like if they're going to get their needs met.
Right. Okay.
So let's say an anxious person is about to get their needs met. The caregiver comes. The anxious person gets really excited. Like, yes, I'm about to get my needs met. Okay. Now, all that becomes like markers, like somatic markers. So later, when you're out there looking for a partner, you believe that attachment is excitement. Like, I'm about to get my needs met. Okay. That becomes what you respond to. So a secure person comes in and is just a consistent person. You're kind of like, I'm not feeling this. Because it doesn't feel like bonding to you.
Right. It's not familiar. You're like, no, attachment like feels like maybe I will,
inconsistent.
Maybe I won't.
Exactly.
It. And that's what's familiar.
That's right.
Wow. Okay. So
then there's the avoidant. Mm. So the avoidant is where they consistently did not get their needs met. Now, this isn't because somebody had a bad attachment figure. A lot of times they either are avoidant themselves or they have maybe too many kids in a row, or there was an illness, or it could be anything that comes in and makes it so that the attachment figure is just consistently not available.
Right.
So what the avoidant does is they pull within and they do what's called auto-regulation. They regulate themselves. I'm going to say much more about this as we unfold it. It's hard to just unreel the whole thing. A lot of it's context. So like an anxious person externally regulates. I'm anxious, right? So when I have a problem, I call up all my friends. I'm like, let's talk about the problem. An avoidant person, when there's a problem in a relationship, will want to get away from you and go, you know, watch the game or do whatever thing they do to return themselves to equilibrium. And that's usually going to be a solo, some kind of a solo experience.
I'm very avoidant. Uh-huh. And I find being in relationships extremely stressful because if anybody wants something from me,
that's right.
I worry that I won't be able to meet need. Or that they won't be able to meet my
need. It feels engulfing.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can't breathe. I can't handle this. And I need to get away. And then, as we know, somehow the anxious and
they love each other. Like, they're like,
why do they just
I'm
end
like,
up
mommy.
Together?
Right? Even in friendships, right? Now, I think that there's much more to learn about this. For example, I am somewhat avoidant with women and anxious with men. Like with women, I'll be just like, I'll be back. Don't even worry. Like I'll have these girlfriends.
Chill.
That exactly. I'll be like, I'm taking a year off. You know what I mean? Or, oh, I know I haven't called in 3 weeks, but no big deal. It's fine. I still love you. I feel like I don't know exactly how that came about. I mean, you could say I'm the fourth style. I'm a disorganized.
Right.
To me, it's not so cut and dried. As I've gotten older, I've done lots of therapy. And in many respects, I'm what's called an earned secure. I essentially function as a secure person in most areas. If you look at my relationship to money, to work, to my son's dad, I'm secure in all those relationships. That means they're comfortable, they function. There's not this sense of worry or fear. There's also not this sense of feeling engulfed. It's neither of those. It's a secure attachment. But in my love relationships, I can still, especially if you give me an avoidant, I'm going to start to experience certain things.
Right.
It's almost, so you guys, this is what I want you to know. You don't have to like try to get the other person to take a test. You just have to dial into you. And that's how you understand what is going on with the other person by what's happening in you.
Ooh, tell us more about that.
So
like,
if
what
you
do you
know,
mean by that?
Yes. So if you know you, then you know, like I have all these different patterns. I could have visualized them as, I don't know, swirls or like whatever, curly cues or different patterns, right? And I know what they mean because I've been in the world dealing with the feeling inside me and what turned out to happen with the other person. And as I've learned those things, I can kind of know who's a sex addict.
Right.
Because if I feel a certain thing, a certain swirly cue, I know it's there. I don't need to ask them. I don't need to do their chart. I just need to check into my own body, which is telling me everything I need to know.
Okay, here's where this is getting confusing.
Okay.
I think it sounds like you're saying when you tune into your own self and your own experience, you know that something is being triggered, right? Like you
can start to know what's being triggered after a time. So I want you to start moving through your life looking for what that thing felt like inside you.
Right. So I get that, right?
Okay.
So like you feel that curly cue and you're like, oh, sex addict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that curly cue before myself.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets tricky.
Okay.
If you have a non-secure attachment style, you can be triggered and not be right. You can feel like, for instance, this person's going to leave me, or this person is smothering me, or this person is really boring. And
that's true.
Maybe they're not.
Right.
You know, or
agree.
Like feelings are not facts.
That's right.
Saying.
That's right.
So how?
That's good. This is good because there's a thing here. You know, I'm 55.
Right.
So this is decades of experience that I can tell. So I know if I'm feeling anxious, I'm probably dealing with an avoidant.
Right.
that when I deal with a securely attached person, I don't get anxiety.
Right.
So I'm talking about the things I've learned from my own experience through myself. So let's say you're at the beginning of your journey, mm-hmm. right? And you, whatever journey we want to call this, you're more toward the beginning of unearthing some of these things. You probably can't trust yourself the same way I trust myself. I'm just sort of being like the crone lady going, this is where you're headed and this is what you're looking for. And this is the knowledge that's available to you that's part of your system and in your body. But right now, before you've done all the unearthing, because I always see it like an archaeological dig. You kind of start out with a cup handle and you're like, wow, look at this cup handle. And then you start digging. And then after a while, you're like, oh, my God, there's a whole fucking city down here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And as you start on your journey of your city, and I would say I started in my journey somewhere in my 20s.
Mm, like most of us.
Right. And then as you start to like really get into your city and you start to learn what things mean to you, then more and more you can trust that thing. So, yes, in the beginning, you may feel engulfed, but it would be if you know you're an avoidant and you feel engulfed, you don't trust that.
Right. Well,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you feel engulfed, you're like, oh, I'm probably with an anxious.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've learned that when I feel engulfed, what I need to do is feel comfortable setting boundaries. And I think that's why people become avoidant, at least for me, is that I'll be like, I don't feel comfortable setting boundaries. Boundaries are hard for me. Mm-hmm. So my body will do it.
Well, avoidants hate conflict.
Right.
So they hate conflict.
So
because you don't trust that anybody's going to hear you.
Right. Exactly. So I will want to just pull away. Mm-hmm. And what I need to do as an avoidant person is be like comfortable with that. And
right.
say, I can take this space for myself and say, okay, I'm going to check back in with you.
Right.
But I need to take this space.
That's great.
Instead of not taking the space
and not having the conversation,
to do what the person wants until I get to the point where I'm like, see. I can't handle this.
Yeah, that's no way to be.
That's
exactly.
No way to be. And also, poor anxious person is like,
what is happening?
Is going on? And they're like triggering and
right.
Flickering.
And then they get anxious, and then that makes you feel engulfed.
Right. Exactly.
And it's a terrible feedback loop. It's like a punk rock show, and somebody's holding the microphone in front of the speaker. It's like, oh my God.
But I think that you're right that it's always about checking in with yourself and letting yourself, like, the feeling is not there to torment you.
No.
It's there to help you, remind you to check back in with yourself.
Yes.
Take the time, settle down, get back to a place, like, to repair yourself.
Right.
Essentially.
Totally. We're actually saying the same thing. It's not that you can't trust. You can trust when you feel engulfed. That
right.
you are being engulfed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You can trust that. Now, the question is, how do you react to that? And I think over the course of the process is you stop reacting to that unconsciously and you start to react to it from a conscious place, which means you have choices.
Right. You bring some awareness there.
And well, you need a partner who's also in that. See, to me, the hardest part is finding a partner who wants to be as aware of their patterns as I'm trying to be aware of mine. I know I'm anxious and I know I can pick an avoidant and then start that dance.
Right.
But a lot of times people don't want, they'll be like, I don't want to have to be that aware. It's too exhausting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, go ahead, live in your prison. I mean, it sucks, but a lot of people would rather do that than do that work. And I mean, I don't really judge. It sounded kind of rude there, but I don't feel that way. It's just, it hurts sometimes.
Well, yeah, I think that a lot of people, we want to avoid pain. And we think that by looking at it, it will bring up pain. If we look at what it's like to be in a relationship, or we look at our own patterns and behaviors, we'll see something ugly that we don't want to see.
And
so we just,
right.
I mean, but we do that on all levels. We'll just be like, I'm just not going to look at it.
But you don't avoid pain that way. All you you don't, that's the thing. The pain is there either way. I think what the real block is that there's no, almost like a faith, or there's a lack of imagination that there's a solution for the problem.
Yes.
You know, and that anybody could. Oh, I mean, if you're an avoidant, there's just a lack of faith that anyone could ever hear your need. Now, you just have to imagine that baby not getting their needs met, that somebody could hear my need and attune to me.
Right.
The avoidant does not believe that would happen.
For sure.
They
it's
think
like,
that
I need to do this by myself. Exactly. I cannot trust you to like That's this right. is too dangerous for yeah. me to trust you being able to do this.
So there's like a tremendous amount of conscious work that is the only thing I want to be looking for out there when you're looking for partners is it's no big deal to be in a to have okay, because here's the thing. The secure people pair up and they move out of the dating pool.
Right.
Pretty early.
Right. They're like, we're partnered.
Yeah.
This is Carolyn.
We're
She's
done.
Like been with her partner for like
Yeah,
15
classic.
Years, and she's like she met that in her early 20s.
Yeah,
and they're just
and
like
that's not a problem.
Moving along.
Yeah, they're not like I need to go fuck 72,000 more people to know for sure if you're the one. They don't have that. That is a classic secure scenario,
right?
I see it all the time. I'm a real avid reader of vows in the New York Times and the New York Times marriage announcements. So many people in their mid-20s, they met somebody at college, that's it, they're bi, they're done,
right?
Okay,
they're like, so, this feels good,
mm-hmm.
we're
this
together
feels good. This
I
isn't
like being
bad.
Cozy with this person,
uh-huh. Exactly.
Wow, that makes I'm just like, what
I know
and like?
The insecures among us are like, what? We don't even know what they're who are.
How
you,
do you do that? And that makes me uncomfortable, the idea of doing that myself, because
yeah.
No, I mean, it doesn't seem
It seems boring,
boring?
No.
It doesn't seem boring, but it just seems...
It did
like
to
a
me.
A little mind-boggling. Like, now I could entertain the possibility, but...
I mean, I always used to joke that I was going to be lying on my deathbed holding the hand of my new boyfriend. Right? Because I was like, I'm just going to do this shit till the wheels fall off. I have just enough
like,
game.
I've mastered this.
Yes.
I'm just going to keep doing it.
But I don't want that. I feel like the thing I want more than anything is secure attachment in a partnership. That is what I want.
Well,
like the next frontier. It's like space
yeah,
for me.
I mean, that when you think of it that way,
yeah.
This mastery of ourselves in intimacy is a huge adventure. And it requires bravery and courage and willingness and true growth as a person.
100%.
Like a lot of heart. And it's courageous. It's heroic.
There's no better work. There's no better work. Because at the core level of what a society needs, I just look at the bigger picture, and I don't want to get political, but the bigger picture in our society right now is a picture of dismissive and avoidant attachment.
Right.
Well, that is the biggest
about,
picture.
Like, not an inability to connect in a healthy way.
Well, I would just look at everything that's mean and hard. And because the thing about dismissive attachment, it has this thing that's called derogating anger. When the needs come up, they derogate. It's like derogatory. It's like, fuck that. Like, I don't even need that. Fuck that. Rah. You'll always know a dismissive because they're going to put it down.
Mm.
Right. Those are the forces that are in charge right now. So if you have a social problem and somebody says, they should just pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Okay, that is not going to solve a social problem.
Right.
I just think you can watch these forces of attachment at a social, societal level and see that the healing comes one pair bond at a time.
Mm.
One mother-baby pair bond or father-baby pair bond and one couple pair bond. And it doesn't matter your orientation. We all seek pair bonding.
Right.
Whether it's with a dog, like really, like
we have the opportunity to heal this with every connection.
But exactly. And nothing is going to heal it better than our connection with another human being. Getting a dog, it's great, but the dog can't leave you. So you're really not working on your attachment situation there.
Right. Because you're like, you will do as I tell you.
Yeah.
Like you will stay
like,
in the house.
Literally, that
say.
Dog evolved to meet your need.
Right.
Which is different than what happens in a thing where we're each choosing to meet each other's needs. So I'm really into the work of Stan Tatkin.
Mm.
He came up with this therapy called PACT therapy, which is like psychobiological attachment couples therapy or something like that. Mm. He's really taken the research of John Gottman, who did a lot on the science of trust and a lot on the science of like couples and who stays together and why. And he came up with a clinical protocol for doing that in therapy. Like, how do you take this couple from a place where they do not trust one another and do not know how to meet one another's needs and create them as a couple who do know how to make each other's needs, meet each other's needs? And I want to say the core thing about it is just taking the action. Because if you take the action that builds trust, your partner experiences trust.
So if you do the thing mm-hmm. that builds trust, mm-hmm. then your partner will experience yes. that trust. Yes.
If the two people are doing the actions, because there's certain actions that if you take them, one of them is that you respond to your partner's bids. A bid right. is anytime your partner makes a sound, like they're reading the paper, they're like, huh. Okay, that's a bid. They right. want you to turn toward them and go, what is it, honey?
Right.
Or the partner's like, oh, I had a bad dream last night. And instead of going, okay, whatever, you go, oh, what happened? You turn toward your partner. The number is like, you need to turn toward your partner. I forget the number. Of course, I forget right now. But it is something like 8 out of 10 times. People who respond 8 out of 10 times report happiness. The people who do 3 out of 10... are unhappy. It's very simple.
So there's like a direct correlation. Yes.
There's a number. Well, so the metric.
So I feel like we could talk about this.
This is all attachment, though.
Literally forever.
Yeah, we could.
So let's take a second to bring this back to the subject at hand, of course, which is mm-hmm. tarot, the right. Two of Cups in particular. I love what you're saying about, first of all, how relationships or attachment, intimacy, is about trust fundamentally, because this card mm-hmm. then we can also say is about mm-hmm. intimacy and trust.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about cards that might come up in correlation with different attachment styles. Mm-hmm. So let's say you pull the Two of Cups and you're like, okay, this reading is about relationships. This is a relational reading. This is how we relate to one another. What cards might indicate a healthy attachment style? Mm. I am thinking the Two of Cups itself is a healthy attachment. It's just mm-hmm. saying, maybe
it's like it's secure, saying, secure.
Saying, yeah, secure. Or it's saying, here is love. Mm-hmm. Here is trust. Here is intimacy. Yeah. I'm thinking like 10 of Cups mm-hmm. would be secure attachment. It's like
it's you just overflowing.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. prayed for it. It came. Mm-hmm. It's doing its thing. It's going where it should go.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
What's the difference between the 9 and the 10?
Oh, that's such a great question. 9 of Cups is where you ask. In the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith version of the mm-hmm. deck, you have this genie essentially sitting mm. in front of all the glorious things that you could have.
Mm.
You know, this one might be an interesting one for you. It's kind of like ask the right question.
Mm.
What are you asking for?
Ooh.
So if you got the 9 of Cups, the question to the querent,
right.
as we call them,
yes.
might be, what are you looking for?
Right.
And for you then, as an expert,
yeah,
what are you looking for in a partner? It sounds like...
Well, I would be looking for secure attachment. It's really interesting because I was in an email relationship with somebody who started telling me about Esther Perel. I'm like, I love Esther Perel and she's very inspiring. And I had a great conversation with her one time. But what she talks about is that you want to find somebody who can do edits and revisions on their own selves and their own lives, because we are constantly evolving as people. And not everybody has the ability to see who they are and then edit and revise who they are in a healthy way to be part of a team and part of a relationship. I mean, number one, I would say somebody who's there to practice loving.
Right. So it's not necessarily someone who is perfect at it,
oh,
or
no.
who's like, yes, like
no
bullseye,
one is. Mm-mm.
But it's someone who is willing to reflect.
Somebody, yeah, who understands that the job of being a partner is to love you.
Mm.
Practice loving. Because I think one of the big things that Stan Tatkin talks about is learning the owner's manual of your partner. You need a partner who wants to learn your owner's manual. We're all sort of specific cars. You know how you have a car and it's a little bit old and it's got some quirks?
Right. You like have you learn... have to push the pedal
exactly.
a little bit harder when
exactly.
this happens. Right.
So you have to learn those things about your partner and be willing to do them. You have to be willing to make your partner feel safe. I've heard it expressed that another person in this area, like in the relationship area, calls it radical consideration.
Mm.
Can someone be radically considerate of you as a human being on the planet, to know your story, to know your wounds, and to meet you there, to love you there? Almost like we talk about parenting.
Mm.
Now, there are lots of parents out there who do not approach parenting in this way. But if you want, you can sort of see yourself as a steward of this being, and that you're there to go, oh my gosh, who is this human? And how do I help them move into whatever is their highest good and their highest self? How do I be part of that project?
Okay, so
that's
that is
what
great.
I'd be looking for.
But so that is great. But then for instance, like for me as an attachment, as an avoidant yeah. person, what mm-hmm. would come up for me would be like, well, what if I do that mm-hmm. and I risk all that?
Yeah.
And then they aren't able to meet me in that place back.
Right. Well, that would be part of the risk that we would take. But I think that in the beginning, this is the stuff that I'd be talking about in the beginning of the relationship. Kind of like if you show up and you're saying some of these things like, look, I'm here about this project, about a relationship project. As a relationship expert, I can tell you they will be gone. Okay, if they're not into it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So if you start off, if you're like,
yeah,
date one,
yes.
you're like,
you don't have to
talk,
lay it all like, on them. But if like, even it's just it's an energy that you carry. They don't stick around very long. They see what I'm about. People are not like sociopaths. If they see what you're about, they go, oh, I either can do that or I can't do that.
Right. Yeah. People usually tell you who they are.
They do.
From the first sense.
I mean, not when you're 19, but right. by the time you're like even 27, 30, 35, once in a while, you'll have an experience where the person doesn't have that level of ability to know themselves. You know, it's funny. I wrote myself a note. I just texted myself the other day. I was like, here's the number one thing you should be looking for. Someone who is conscious.
We are leaning in to hear what you have to say.
Isn't
about
it?
This.
I literally wrote, I texted myself like 24 hours ago. This is what we're looking for. Me, yesterday, the number one thing you're looking for in a partner is being conscious.
What I love about that is because this is a tarot podcast and tarot, magic, witchcraft, all spiritual traditions are
right.
all about bringing awareness
100%.
And consciousness.
And see, some people don't want to be conscious. If you said that, like, you know what I'm really looking for? I'm looking for someone who wants to be conscious on date one.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. yeah. You would hear them either put that idea down, like, oh, I don't know. What about the mystery? Or they would say some, you know what I'm saying?
They would like immediately contradict
yes.
you.
They wouldn't like it.
Right.
And then it's up to you, your conscious self, to be hearing what they're saying. Because one of the aspects that we evolved as, again, we are primates. We have certain evolved characteristics. And one of them, according to Trivers, is self-deception and deception. Deception and self-deception are huge pieces of the mating, pair bonding situation.
Can I add on to that, mm-hmm. that it would be like sevens, like seven of cups.
I was just going to say.
Seven of swords, like these issues relating
yes.
to deception. So,
because here's the thing, like deception is part of mating, right? Look across all the species. They deceive one another. You know, we have like makeup, but then there's other species that are like, look, I'm this. And then they get the other fish or monkey or whatever it is to come close. And then they do their mating thing on them. And the thing that works best about deception, especially for people, is self-deception. If I don't know I'm deceiving you, it works so much better on you than if I know I'm deceiving you, because then you can pick up on my tells.
Right.
And if I'm self-deceived, you cannot pick up on my tells.
Okay, so this is good. If you get like seven, especially sevens reversed in a reading, often those are relating to deception. So you might want to ask yourself, am I deceiving myself?
Yes.
In what ways am I lying to myself
right.
in relation to matters of the heart or mm-hmm. intellectually? Let's go back for a second to the anxious attachment style. What card do we think might relate to that? I was thinking the Nine of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a picture of a woman sitting in bed, like she's just woken up from a nightmare. It's sometimes called the nightmare card. And that's very much about being plagued by possibilities about what might happen.
Mm. Negative or positive.
Yeah.
Or negative.
Well, I mean, and I think that happens in anxious attachment styles both ways.
It's very obsessive. Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. it's like one of the reasons why, in my experience, anxious people get upset is because immediately they start fantasizing about the life that you're going to have mm-hmm. together before you even have got a chance to say anything
yeah.
or do anything. It's like, so you're disappointing them if you're not bringing flowers, getting married, doing all the things when it's like, we just met. Like, how?
Right. Unless they're conscious.
Right.
And then, because here, I want to say, here's where the lack of conscious awareness pays off for the avoidant, for example. Because you go, well, why would an avoidant ever get with an anxious, right? It pays off because, well, first of all, it confirms their worldview that they can,
and
that no one is.
We love that more than anything, to have a worldview.
Yes. it confirms their worldview that no one can meet their needs and that the world is not a place where their needs are going to get met and that no one is attuned.
Right.
But also it allows, when somebody is in their own fantasy, it allows me, let's say I'm going to be the avoidant in this example, I get to hide.
Right.
See, here's the thing about, I did a podcast, I was talking about this, and at the end, it was bachelor people about, I mean, perfect, right? And at the end, one of the bachelor guys says, oh my God, I've never felt so seen, right? But he's an avoidant. And I said, you feel like that now. And it feels good. When they first get seen, the avoidant loves it, right? But after like 3 or 6 months of being seen, they're like, will you stop looking at me?
Yes.
Right?
Woman, yes.
They do not want to be seen. So getting with somebody who's watching a movie of their fantasy is perfect because no one's looking at you.
Right.
Also, avoidant, I don't know what card this is. Avoidant is the power couple. Those are the two people who...
They're like focusing on something else.
Everything out there. And so, I want to stress that an attachment, even if you're an avoidant, you're still attached. You're just attached avoidantly.
Right.
And avoidant, they never, like, I heard somebody say about an avoidant, like, they don't really tell you they love you, but they give great gift bags.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so there's like a lot of performance in an avoidant relationship, but the avoidant can build a kingdom.
So maybe it would be like the Emperor card with like the King of Swords or the King of Wands or something, like these two kings together.
They really
were like,
build.
We're about conquering the kingdom.
Yes. But they, but here's the thing. If you're a conscious avoidant, you start to feel unseen and lonely over time. Because deeply, the human condition is that we want to be known and seen. So it's like maybe it's safe to stay back there or to be with the unconscious person. Maybe it's safe. But after a while, if you're moving up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you've got all your needs met. Now you want self-actualization. You're like, I want to be known.
Yeah.
I want to be seen. And then, but just know that if you're an avoidant, the moment you really step forward into that kind of a relationship, it's going to be extremely challenging, you know? Now for the anxious person, that's all they want is to be seen, right?
Right.
The anxious just was never seen and yearns to be seen. So of course there's also dynamics. This is the thing. I think a lot of times people feel like a relationship is like a box that they open and then they go, well, let's see, what's the relationship? It's like, no, it's not like that. It's more like a movie you're writing. So two people are co-creating, and I don't know what the card here is, but two people are co-creating this story, whatever it is. So the minute, whether I'm on this side, the anxious side or the avoidant side, the minute I make a different move, I'm starting to write a different story, you know? Because the other person will either meet me or bail. That is just the nature of relationships. And even if they bail while still in the relationship for a time, if I'm really present, they will bail sooner.
Right. And then you'll you'll save yourself a lot of time
and
energy if you're just like, if I can just be my authentic self,
yes.
If I can be honest with myself, if I can speak to the boundaries that I need and also the desires that I have straight away, then either they can hang or they can't.
Yeah.
And it's better that we know now rather than indulging in fantasies and deflections and derailments. I want to bring up this quote by one of the faves of our podcast, Mary Kay Greer. She's a really famous tarot writer. And she has an affirmation that I wanted to bring up with you about this card. She has affirmations for every card. This is in the show notes, people, if you're interested. And her affirmation for the Two of Cups is, I love others as I love myself.
Oh my gosh.
Let's discuss.
Amen.
Let's discuss. What does that mean? How can we break this down?
God, I remember being in a hotel room in San Francisco in the 45 millionth fight, if you want to call it that, with this particular partner I was with for almost 6 years. And I remember saying to him, you just don't love yourself. So of course you're not going to be able to love me, because you can only love another person as much and as well and as skillfully as you are loving yourself. And if you don't know how to do that, or you haven't learned yet how to do that, you're not going to be able to love the other person. And if the person you're dealing with cannot love themselves, they're not going to be able to love you.
That's something I feel like when you're young, you just, it's really hard to get. It's something you really have to earn, especially when you're brokenhearted, right? Someone's really hurt you. And you think, that's right, this is a reflection of how they feel about me. Mm-mm. And they think I am worthless. And that's why they're hurting me like this. And really, it's like they are treating you like they treat themselves every day.
That's right.
And that is why they're behaving like this.
That's right. If they're, I mean, people act on the outside how they feel on the inside. So if they are abandoning you, it's because they abandon themselves. I remember, because I'm the queen of the long email, as one as you can imagine.
I bet they are so good.
Oh, my God.
Can we have a book of those?
Seriously. I once had this guy. I said to him, I'm like, this is going to be the last long email I write. He literally wrote back, please don't let this be the last long email.
Oh, he was like, I will do anything to get more of this.
I know. Even though he didn't want to be with me. He wasn't going to meet my needs, but he did love the emails, goddammit. But anyway, I said to him at the end of the long email, I said, you know, the truth is, it's not actually me you're abandoning. It's yourself.
Right.
You had a dream that this relationship was part of, and you cannot show up for yourself in that dream. You are willing to give away that dream. And I don't know why. But
okay. It's also not my problem.
I don't have that because I'm not an avoidant.
Right.
Right.
I just like totally
See, that's
showed
the derogating
myself.
Anger. No, it's fine. I wish I had that. Believe me. I'm like, can you download some of that for me? Like, I wish I had that. I don't have that. But here's what I do have. But it isn't about me. And I did know that it wasn't about me. Mm. In the olden days, I did not know that. I would really think this was a referendum on my worth. And right. Now I know it's how he feels about himself.
But that's one of the things that I think is kind of magical about this affirmation, that when we say I love others as I love myself, that means that you can work on your ability to create love in your life by working on your ability to love and relate to yourself, or
100%.
Talk to, like, reparent yourself. It's like, be attached.
Yes.
Like form.
Be
those,
loving toward you.
Yes.
When you do something dumb, you're like, it's okay, sweetheart. I was just thinking the other day about how I was involved with somebody once who was like, I don't know if I've ever been in love. Okay. See, I said that. Hmm. Like, I don't think he said it that way. I think he said it like, that's, I don't know if I've ever been in love, Tracy. Mm. I don't know if that was a line read either. But anyway, he didn't know if he'd ever been in love. And he's the one who taught me, you know what he didn't understand? In love isn't a thing out there. In love is a place inside of yourself that you connect to.
Right.
With regard to another person. And he didn't know how to do that consistently. He kept thinking that it was a feeling, a sensation produced by the other person, like a drug or something. And then he'd be like, I don't know if any other human being ever came along that made me feel that. I'm like, no, baby, no. This is where you have a place inside you that you go to. And then you connect to another person from that place. Mm. And what he was saying is, I don't have that place. I have not met myself in that place, and I have not been able to offer that to anybody else either. Mm. And I felt so much compassion for him. You know, I still feel for him.
I feel like those are the moments where you heal from heartbreaks, is when you can see that person trying and wanting and not being able to be there. I see that place of like, what did you just call it? It's like a place of love that is inside yourself.
Inside
in the tarot,
you.
I see it as the garden. Like, the garden is a motif that reappears in many cards. Mm-hmm. And that garden is that place of love and communion. In the Ace of Cups, like, there's this fountain at the center of the garden of the goddess of love. And it's like, we can go and we can bathe anytime in that fountain and we can drink from that fountain. And in the Two of Cups, they're like pouring the waters back and forth. They're sharing their own fountain with each other. But when we can't access that garden, there's like a wall around that garden. And I feel like there's those moments in your relationships with people where you realize like, oh, you can't access that, and how fucking devastating.
Right.
And that does help you
heal,
because you're like, that's not just about me, that's something that person is missing.
And I would add too that when you don't respond to them from the place of anger, you know, when you don't take it personally, that's when they also get to see, that's a gift to them, where they're like, oh, see, because as long as it's about me being angry or something, they don't have to look at themselves in that way and see that it's just a thing that they're lacking inside.
They can just defend themselves.
Exactly.
Put up the shield and be like, that's
exactly
not.
So you heal both people is my point. When you go to that place and you understand and you can see from that place of compassion, you not only heal yourself, as you said, you also offer the other person an opportunity to see their situation with a correct view, as opposed to a distorted view of lack or, you know, unlovingness, anger, whatever.
Oh my gosh, I'm twinkling my hands. So I know that we're probably running close to the end here, but so do you have like an exercise or a ritual? You know, how do we access that garden? Like, what should we be doing in order to do that?
God, I'm trying to think, like, how did I make that shift? I feel like it was really about, I mean, it sounds so elementary, but I started to really see myself as this person I was offering love to. Like, I had pictures around my house of me at various ages, a young me, and I started to really try to approach her from that place almost all the time. Like, it's okay. Like, I saw myself as a mother to myself. And weirdly, that's where it started, because this goes full circle. That attachment begins with that primary attachment. Mm. So that's the thing I have to heal first. And I can do that unilaterally.
Right.
And then as I heal, it's like I start to vibrate from a different place. And I start to see these other relationships, like when I'm out on a date, for example, without the distortions that come when I'm coming from that defended place or I'm not loving myself. When you're loving yourself, that date is not a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
It's
not
just an interesting thing.
Exactly. It's just an opportunity to be like, oh, hi, who's this human? And what can I be in my joining with this person, my energy plus this other energy? It's not about like, are they tall? What's their job? It's not coming from this, what I would call like a very capitalist place where it turns very transactional and I'm subjectifying this person and in a thumbs up or thumbs down that I would never want somebody to do to me. So even just relating to myself from a place of that kind of love changes the way I'm relating to other people. And then that necessarily changes whatever happens after that.
So it's not a transaction, it's an experience.
Exactly. And a lot of it is just to experience myself in their presence.
Right. Right.
Like, what does it feel
like? Fine cheese is the one. You're like, let me savor this and see what it's like.
To be me with this person.
I love that.
And then there's nothing to get.
Right.
There's nothing to lose. The thoughts that are produced by the anxiety or the thoughts that are produced by the avoidance no longer are operating the main operating system.
Right. You're
in a meditation.
Yeah. It's like being at the movie and being so into the movie. And
yeah.
Like, this is what's happening. I'm feeling fear. I'm feeling excitement.
Yes.
I'm feeling
it's
like,
yoga or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, I love that. I think that that's a great ritual too. I use that actually in my rituals of keeping pictures of yourself as a child, like on your altar. Like right now I'm doing that. I'm working with the Emperor a lot, the Emperor energy. It's an Emperor year. And so I'm really working on refathering myself. There's a lot in relation to my avoidant attachment style in relation to my dad. And so I see the Emperor as like trees or like sequoias or mountains or like
immovable,
like alpha wolves, like they're easier for me to deal with like that. And then I put my little child self in, surrounded by these trees, you know, like thinking about how can I be the father to her or the mother to her. How can I heal that relationship and be that for her? Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're talking about is a pretty witchy solution there with those pictures. Mm-hmm. Well, Tracy, oh my God, this
we
has
could
been
do this again.
The funnest. Please, can we do this? We're doing
anytime.
Cups all season, so we might have to have you back to just break it down with the cups for us some more. In the meantime, can you tell us a little bit about where we can find you?
Oh my gosh. Come find me on Instagram at Tracy McMillan.
You friends, I'm just going to lay it to you straight here. I love this woman's Instagram. She's just always dropping pearls of wisdom. She's so charming. She wears great clothes.
There are tops. Yes.
There's tops.
There will be tops.
There will be tops. And yeah, this is just, you want to tune in for this. So please really do yourself a favor and go follow Tracy.
And also I have a show on the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Yes.
It's called Family or Fiance. And it's like couples, they want to get married and their families are against it. And everybody moves into a house in Malibu. And, you know, it goes down. It's like things
plates
happen.
Plates are a-flying.
Things happen. But I got to say, a lot of healing happens too. An amazing amount of healing happens. And sometimes the people show you what not to do, what you don't want. But sometimes they show you what you want. So it's pretty fun.
Much like
and
our partners.
I basically coach the couples. So it's a lot of like my view of relationships and it's good stuff. I'm proud of the show.
I cannot wait to tune into that. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh
we
my
love
God.
You
Thank
so
you
much.
For having me. It was so fun.
Come with me, follow.
This week in the astral realms, this is our little segment once again, just to keep you up to date. Remember, this Friday is the new moon in Aquarius. I will be writing about that in my newsletter this week, so be sure to sign up, link in the show notes if you haven't already. But briefly, this new moon would be a good time to do ritual around or pull cards for bringing healing to your community if that's an issue for you, if you've got some friend problems going on. Also, getting breakthrough ideas. Aquarius is that breakthrough energy, that wild innovator energy. It's also about building friendships while simultaneously increasing your ability to be independent. So if you're looking to create more connections in your life or looking to increase your independence, now would be a good time to do some ritual or pull some cards this Friday. Lavender is a great incense to use during these ceremonies. You can ring some bells. Aquarius likes that. Do a little research into the way that Saturn is at work in your chart. Saturn is the ruler of Aquarius. Aquarius is the masculine aspect of Saturn, whereas Capricorn is the feminine aspect of Saturn. So if you do any of these things, you should be on the right track. So enjoy the new moon. Tune in next week. We'll have a very special guest, one of my dearest, oldest friends, Jade Chang, a writer, a thinker, an extraordinary person. And you guys will be delighted to know that for the very first time, Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, our producer, the one who's sort of the ghost behind the host with the most, will be talking on the podcast for the first time ever. We'll be talking about the Three of Cups, where it's all about your friends. Will they let you down? Will they be around? Will they make you so happy you won't know what to do with yourself? They probably will. Tune in next week to find out.
Hello, listeners. This is just a reminder that the live call for our Emperor workshop happens on February 2nd, and we'll be selling replays for another 12 days after that. We've got the links in the show notes. Between the Worlds is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs with editing help from Jiha Lee. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a sweet review and/or posting your favorite parts. You can tag us at Oracle of LA or Between the Worlds Podcast. Thank you.
Deep.